Today is September 6, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for our weekly business session. Welcome, everyone. We're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. So please rise, gentlemen, and remove your hats.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You wouldn't mind putting your cell phones on silent or vibrate? Sure, appreciate that. We've got pretty varied agenda here today, so we're going to start out with item number one, which is recognition of employees. We'll have them come forward, those who are attending. We just have one this morning. Then we'll go into our administrative calendar, review those items, take public comment, and then come back and take action on the administrative calendar before moving into the consent calendar. So, and item number one this morning, recognition of employees. Not attending this morning, we have Calvin Harris of Public Works, 20 years. Douglas Whalen, Facilities Services, 20 years. And then we've got Joshua Sabato of Parks, 10 years. It's kind of funny being here long enough to see handing out the 15-year pins and the 5-year pins for those people. And then I remember doing this 5 years ago with Denise Olson in our Community Corrections Department. She's been here for 20 years. So if Mr. Galliran, Denise, and our liaison to the Community Corrections Department is Commissioner Dan DeYoung, they want to facilitate this recognition. That'd be great. Thank you, Denise. I'll just appreciate it. Good to see you.
Good morning. We'd like to give you County of Gosee certificate of appreciation to all whom these present shall come. Greetings, know ye. Congratulations. And in American, that's anyway, for 20 years?
Yeah.
Congratulations. Thank you so much for your service.
Hi, I'm Nate Galliran, representing Community Corrections. Denise is a humble but very effective leader. This 20-year pin, it symbolizes a lot of contributions over the last 20 years. Denise started the AIP program 14 years ago. That's for people that are coming out of prison that don't have a whole lot of skills, that don't have a whole lot of basic needs met, and Denise has facilitated a lot of that to meet those needs, to affect some change in people's lives. The last couple of years, she's been working with Secure Treatment. She helped found that program, again, changing people's lives on a local level. Just within the last couple of months, or year, I guess now it's been, she helped start the gender-specific caseload and gender-specific programming that is specific to females, that is helping change people's lives as well. She helped start a billing process that has grossed, I think, over $100,000 over the course of the start of the program that Josephine County Community Corrections would not have seen otherwise. And so for that, those are just a few of the contributions that Denise has made. And I think we need to recognize her with a huge applause. And I appreciate her very much with her professionalism, her candor, her quiet, humble attitude that's always effective and always genuine. So thank you, Denise.
We just appreciate the fact that you just stuck with it, you know, and 20 years, that's a lot. That's huge. So thank you again.
They said she has a 20-minute speech for her.
What's that?
She has a 20-minute speech for her.
You want to say anything?
I just want to thank for my family and my work family, because I wouldn't be here had it not been for all of you guys. And I just can't be a dear reporting counselor. I'm not sure where the 20 years went. And where the journey has brought me, but I'm so grateful to be a part of this community and to be a part of the team that tries to make a difference. And our motto for the county says, God do the best, and I
life, actually. So.
Thank you,
Simon. I just thought I'd throw that in there. All of your adult life. We're not done yet, so thank you so much. Item number two is administrative actions. Consideration of, we've got 2A, which is approval of local agency agreement number 32280, locally delivered state-funded project program, Sand Creek Road Bridge. And we have Mr. Brand is here to speak on that item. We also have the approval of the contract for personal services with David Evans and Associates for the replacement of the Sand Creek Bridge. Mr. Brand is to speak to both item 2A and B. Public Works Director.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rob Rennes, Public Works. As we talked about last Thursday, you're seeing an agreement that's similar to, exactly the same as we typically will do with our chip seal dollars, whereby the federal dollars that would be available for a project are exchanged for state dollars, 94 cents to the dollar. So that 6 cents effectively cuts those federal strings and removes a lot of the red tape, if you will, that would come with these types of projects. Sand Creek Bridge washed out last winter during the deluge, and at this point needs to be replaced. We were able to get the state this emergency funding for the program using the exchange, so hopefully most of our bridges, we have that 10.27 match, local match that we have to do. This one, we're hoping it's going to be a net zero to the county. As you'll look at it there, the estimated cost is $1.85 million about, and we're effectively exchanging this, ending up with $1.56 million money towards the project. So theoretically, the county would potentially be responsible for that amount above $1.556 million, but we're confident it will get done for really close to that, if not below. So I have my fingers crossed there will not be a local dollar having to ultimately be spent on getting this project done. The other piece you have in front of you there is the actual contract with David Evans. They would be doing the engineering, design, survey, inspection of the Sand Creek Bridge once that project starts. They are on a state pre-qual list. There's a handful of firms around the state that are qualified to do state-funded bridges. They are one of them. We've done work with them on the past on a variety of different projects, from transportation system plans to other bridges to earthquake seismic studies. They do excellent work and are excited to be going, and we're excited to have them. We probably have a kickoff meeting in about the next 2 days if we can get this done. So time will be at the essence a bit, but we're confident we can get it done next summer.
It's amazing to think that we need that kind of lead-in. But it's obviously a fairly large project. I'm concerned about the optimism about coming in under cost or projected from a standpoint that our current public works projects are often, there's so much work for people nowadays that, which is a blessing, but it's also not real positive for having a real competitive bid that often comes in under. So we're seeing people not even respond. Our last big project, just as an example, for the courtroom upgrade, which we're going to talk about later, we only had one person respond to that. Maybe it's because it's challenging because it's judges' benches, but at the same time, some of our other projects that we have going on in the county, there's just a lot of work around, so people can be more particular.
Right, right. Yeah, no guarantees. I think the hopefulness is in discussion with the DEA. They're able to see what is happening around the state on similar projects that are bidding now. And I think a lot of the outfits that we work on a project of this size are not really taking some of that small work anyway. They have their eyes always on these million and bigger projects for bridge work.
Okay.
So fingers crossed, we'll get some good numbers when this thing goes out to bid in the winter.
Anything from the board?
All I can think of is if it doesn't come under, where's the money come from to pay for it? Are you willing to stake a raise on it?
No,
It would be the Public Works Road Bridge Reserve. So, yeah, fingers crossed it doesn't come to that, but that's what the reserve is there for. And you'd hate to say that that's what it was, but if the bridge came in the full $1.85 million, we ended up having to put in $300,000 of Public Works Reserve money to get that project done. It needs to happen. It's an important route. So,
and probably more importantly is how much more would it cost if the federal strings were still attached?
Right. I don't even want to speculate. It would be a lot, and it would probably be best case getting built in 19, if not 2020.
I think it's a good segue into where would the other funds come from. The Roads and Bridges Fund is actually not as robust as it should be, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the considerations is this was not the only project that required those funds in the last year. You expended a significant amount of money out of your program to take care of the other flooding issues that we have in the county. And some of those actually come to fruition years down the road when we find out Colbert being adversely impacted because of the rain that we had last year, which we wish we had right now.
It was an extensive winter.
Yeah, it was. So thank you for your diligence on this. Great. Appreciate it.
Rob?
Yes,
the bridge we're replacing, how old was it, and was it due for upgrading or anything on seismic or anything of that sort?
That bridge, I believe, dated to early 60s, but surprisingly, it was in good shape. I believe the sufficiency rating was a 91 prior to that event, which is exceptional. That's what you see on a bridge that was 3 or 4 years old. No evidence of scour or anything else. Once that failure happened downstream, the channel basically chased straight down 11 or 12 feet, and the abutments on the bridge were effectively left hanging. So that's why this bridge is going to go from 31 feet to 81 feet upon the new design.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah, it was unfortunately one of our oldest, but yeah, one of our strongest bridges. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yep.
Okay, thank you so much. Item number 3 is requests and comments from citizens. Please just raise your hand. 3 minutes. State your general address, not your specific street address. And Ms. Castanelli, you're up and walking around. So,
all right, thank you.
Looked like you were heading this direction.
Absolutely. Thank you. Amy Castanelli, Merlin, Oregon. Today I have 2 requests. The first is to ask that if a commissioner travels out of the county for business, that at the following week of business session, he or she gives us a detailed report about the cost of their meals, motels, and travel expenses, along with a full report regarding the purpose and the result of the meeting. The public is the one footing the bill for these junkets, and at the very least, we should be given a verbal report of the result. This board could start today by providing information concerning the Colorado conference that Commissioner Morgan attended last week. My second request is to table items 4B and 4C on today's agenda. These administrative positions are essentially the same as the junk ordinances that were voted down in the November 5th, 2013 special election by roughly 80% of the votes. County Code Enforcement Measure 1754 was voted down by 79.45%, and the Solid Waste Ordinance Measure 1753 was defeated by 76.63%. The public has clearly spoken that this is not what they want. This board has been more than happy to implement policy from results of some very slanted advisory questions on the ballot. Yet when the electorate has overwhelmingly expressed its desire for no county code enforcement, you conveniently ignore our wishes. Passing such action today is clearly disingenuous and would be a complete betrayal of the citizens you are supposed to represent. There was no cost to county information submitted in the documentation. Where on the union pay scale will this code enforcer be paid? This last year's budget says that A18 pay range is from $3,500 to over $5,000 per month. And how much is the commercial plans examiner going to be paid? That A22 pay range is from $4,300 to well over $6,000 per month. Once again, the ones footing the bill are being purposefully kept in the dark. Any comments or questions for me? Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Seligman?
Good morning, Commissioners. Mark Seligman, Selma, Oregon. As I make my way through the smoke to get here today, I must share a complete agreement with Commissioner Hare regarding logging in the Biscuit area, which if that was done, and salvage operations were taken, we wouldn't be choking on it once again. Certainly, one needs to be critical of federal, state, city, and county when they do not represent the needs of the citizens. And this is clearly one. Lake Selmac, I spoke to Rob Brandis about, has no escape route. The road is closed. I urge him to make for the duration of this fire, to make a situation where residents of that road can have more than one way to get out. A flood, a mudslide, is certainly more preferable than a fire, and I know I've been through both. Now this brings us to code enforcement. As Sandy mentioned a number of years ago, the county voted down additional code enforcement officials by a margin of 80 to 20. If you care, and that was in November, if you care about the way the voters vote, you do not add these two new code enforcement officials unless you make an ordinance. You've gone around it rather deftly by having a text amendment. Further, on the cannabis issue, if you are a grower prior to February 2016 and you want a small canopy grow in Josephine County, according to the state, you are eligible for a Lux exemption. You didn't go through the county. It's important that you're aware of this when you go for further proposals. Commissioner Hare, you like to quote the non-binding proposal you put on the ballot. Now you would like it to be binding. Only 25% of the voters actually voted yes, eligible voters, and most of them are in the city, so 75% either didn't vote or voted no. Commissioner Hare, your attempt to remove Christine Gardner from the Planning Commission, as well as your interest in Orr Hempco, shows a clear conflict of interest, and I would urge you to recuse yourself. You also supported moratoriums on dispensaries in the county. Some portions of the proposals that are unfair. Private property rights. You cannot rent property to a grower. Where else does the county tell you who you can and cannot rent property to? The Josephine County is dependent upon cannabis. Ask Guy Tower, Department of Labor. Real estate values are up 30%. Clearly, many businesses benefit by this. If you pass these onerous proposals, you will hurt the economy of Josephine County, because it's the best place it's been since I've lived here. Paul Wilson is preparing a statement in opposition to what the community development director is trying to do. Lawsuits are being ready. I sincerely hope you look at what the people want and what your financial liability will be. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, Mr. Jones.
Mike Jones, Grants Pass. Recently, I watched all the Planning Commission hearings on marijuana and afterwards made some observations on Facebook, which got a lot of people contacting me, both legal growers, illegal growers, neighbors of growers. Many of the situations that exist now, egregious violators, I have been to these places, seen them, they're not being addressed now. What is there in the new ordinances that are going to address some of the situations? I saw multiple RVs on a piece of property that's already a violation. And that's been there for a couple of years, at least that I know of. And I have seen people complaining about that at weekly business sessions right to you guys. So if there's no will to enforce now, what good are more ordinances? Are you guys going to address enforcement when you enact these things? Now, it seems to me the only thing that the ordinances are doing now is putting pressure on those who have a tendency towards going for legality to come in and give a few thousand dollars to Josephine County. But after the fact, the people that are growing illegally right next door to them are not going to be impacted. They're just going to continue on with what they're doing. So I'd like to hear some about that. Thanks.
Ms. Ahrens.
Judy Ahrens, resident of Josephine County. I too, disheartened, probably won't do it, but I'll mention anyway for the record and for the videotape that you table 4B and 4C, 4E, for the exact reasons that a few of the citizens who were even up here have shared that. You know, we have U.S. Constitution Day coming up, and I know when you took your office, you made an oath. To protect our country, protect the citizens, and one way you can protect them is quit gouging them.
quit just adding more and more. I know all the levy things passed, so that gives you a little extra little patty money, but that doesn't give you the right to say, now we're going to use it for, what was it, for a senior code enforcement person. After what from citizens had said, they said, look, the citizen said, no, let that sink in. Over 80% or close to 80% said, no. That's, I mean, you don't, you represent the majority and the minority, I understand. But just have a few, and to eliminate the majority, it's not becoming of a job that you folks represent all the citizens. So I'm really saddened by that. I thought Mrs. Cass and I did a great job in her presentation. She always gives a lot of thought and research, and I love her protecting our community. So with her copy, I'll try to do my best, since there's not too many people that watch this, even though there's a few, and I hope they adhere to what she was saying. But I'll make sure I get my copies over to KJO and a few of the radio stations and a few of the organizations like Oath Keepers or Liberty Watch Now, and there's some women organizations, and I'll make sure they see that. It's not too expensive to make about 100 or 200 copies of this. So I'll make sure that her reason gets out there. Now, if you want to think about it, that might be a good idea to dwell on it if it's not, quote, an emergency that you have to get this through. But if not, and you pass it, I will let the people know. I have to get on if I got construction going on. But I will let the people know, and if I can make it on my few hours that I have available during the day, to let the merchants know. But they need to know what's going on because they're working so hard during the day. They don't have time to come to the meetings. Now, if you want to be compassionate, you can have the meetings at 7 o'clock or 6 so the people go home, feed their kids, and come to the meeting. And then they would hear people like some of the citizens that speak up. But they won't have the opportunity. They're too busy working, trying to find out where their next paycheck and things are going to come from. So I so earnestly ask you to table that and give it a lot of thought. Think how justice it is, you know, do that job. And also, people contributing to Hurricane Harvey and our fires here, you'll have a few extra bucks. That would be a good thing to do. There's a lot of compassion being shown now, and that gives me hope that people are good, because I don't see that too much anymore. People are, they don't consider justice being a good thing anymore. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes. Is there else?
Good morning, Commissioners. Steve Rouse, North Applegate Road. I'm here to address item 4D on your agenda, which is the approval of the findings of fact and conclusions of law for the Brimstone Gulch hearing. We're also a party in a legal appeal on this, as you're aware, I think. Mr. Hicks has filed, well, did file a motion to dismiss, which was essentially denied by LUBA. One question to the board this morning is, when did you authorize Mr. Hicks to participate at LUBA? That is a requirement of the Rural Development Code, and I just missed that meeting, I guess, or that authorization. So I'd like to know that. Second, reading the very brief findings, I'd like to comment on item 2, which is the application and hearing process, which states that the board voted unanimously to find that the county did not have authority in the review matter. I'm not sure if you remember the hearing, but Commissioner Morgan did young. Stated nothing at the hearing. You're absolutely silent. You're silent. And I'd like to know what exactly happened when the decision was made. The Rural Development Code, Article 31.130, Final Action, describes what is supposed to happen. The decision of the hearing body shall be made after the hearing is closed and deliberations are completed. And it shall be in the form of a motion, duly seconded, and approved by the majority of the members. The presiding officer shall poll each member regarding their vote and the reasons for it. All members shall state their vote for the record. None of that occurred. It's essential that the board understand the procedures of a land use hearing and that they be followed. There are multiple procedural errors. I realize supposed to be 5 minutes for the opponents to question staff about this and that. Then there's supposed to be an opposition for a rebuttal. Then there's supposed to be a time for summation by both parties. And then there's supposed to be discussion by the commissioners in the public with the staff if they have questions. None of these things occurred. So my question is, when exactly was this decision made? And it's, I think it's essential that that be disclosed to LUGA for a fair hearing. The essential part of the Atlantic hearing is that it be a full and fair hearing. Close of hearing, item M, the presiding officer shall close the hearing when certain that all testimony has been heard and all questions have been answered. I think that was woefully inadequate by Commissioner Hare in his conduct of the hearing. And I'd like some comments or answers to those questions. Okay.
Anyone else? Yes. Hold the mic just a little bit closer.
I'm Carol Hackner. I'm also here from Minnesota. And I am here because I did a request for public release of information back on 6/23 for information from the 5:30 executive meeting, the minutes where you did make the decision to not decide at Minnesota. Last business meeting that I was here for, Simon Harris said I would get this information. This is a long time ago. I applied for this information. I mean, I thought this was a legal thing. Maybe should that one give the information to me if I asked for it. Okay, so this information is very important to us for the legal proceedings. So I'm just wondering, have I received that?
So those questions we'll answer after everybody's done.
Okay.
Yep. Happy to do so.
All right, so I also want to say that on the June 2nd meeting, there was no motion. There was no motion to for that vote. And it's according to Luther, that's what we need to do. So I just want to make this point. I'm really surprised because the stand said to sit there and just deal with all this, but this is again hammered all the time. And I don't know how to do it. It's crazy.
Practice.
It seems like you have a lot of unhappy people in the township. The only thing I want to say is about the pot, like the marathon. How come they get so much more consideration than we do? I mean, we're talking about a line across the street from us. When it comes to marijuana, you're worried about keeping your store, you're worried about noise, you're worried about smell. This is going to impact us big. I mean, like, this is going to be much worse than marijuana growth. I mean, just take that into consideration. You know, you're going to make up all these new rules for marijuana groups. You're talking about right across the street from me, I'm going to have a place to mine. I mean, that's not what we expected to have when we lived here.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, gentleman in the back, and then Mr. Ford. I say that, I'll try to remember.
Good morning, commissioners. Some good news, it was raining a little bit.
Speak into the mic. You need to state your name and your general
My name is Steve McNamara from Sunny Valley.
You need to speak into the mic.
Brimstone Road. I just want to touch on a point that Brimstone Natural Resources application, they say that they're going to have a processing plant approximately 1,500 feet where they propose this strip mine on Brimstone Road. And nothing has been addressed about on that permit, where it's going to be, how it's going to be done. Is it a legal processing plant? How are they going to deal with the water situation? We have neighbors that are running out of water right now that own a processing plant 1,500 feet from our property, and it's a much concern. This board seems to feel as though they don't have any control or regulation for the mining on Brimstone. It's proposed, but because it's a forest commercial, and the border is a 10-foot wide road and the rest is residential. I think the board should consider how much the impact is going to be on over a dozen families that live along that road. It's a one-way, or it's not a one-way, it's a dead-end, one-lane road. And the proposed permit from Brimstone Natural Resources, the they take 300 yards of material out to be processed 1,500 feet down the road, that's approximately 50 round trips of a dump truck that holds 10 yards going back and forth. It's going to be a major impact on the community there. And I think that should weigh heavily over, you know, the Brimstone's right to do some mining there when it's going to impact an entire neighborhood that's been established there for a long time, a lot longer than Brimstone Resources have been in business. There's a lot of other mitigating circumstances, but I won't take up any more of your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, Mr. Ford.
One of the things we have now is this fire that's going on in the smoke. Mr. Sullivan was right about one thing. If we went in on the biscuit fire and harvested that timber before it got unusable, it wasn't merchantable anymore, we might not have some of the issues that we could potentially have if this fire continues to move into Johnson County and it starts to impact the areas that had the biscuit fire. There is absolutely no way that we're going to be able to go in and harvest the amount of timber that's burning right now. This is all going to be unmerchable timber. It's going to end up being just another fire hazard. You usually get, once you have a fire this magnitude, within the next couple of years, you're going to have at least one more, maybe two. And it's just unacceptable. These fires should never have been allowed to get to the size they are. And we need to continue to put pressure on our federal and, senators and congressmen to change this. I heard something on the other day that states looking at help trying to push that forward. That's a federal issue. These are fires that are started on federal land, and they are mismanaged by the federal government. And I don't know what the answer is, except for to continue to put pressure, even after these fires are out, on our senators and our congressmen to get something done at the federal level to change the way that BLM and the Forest Service manages fire in our communities. We seem to get when we have these hurricanes, and I've been through a few of those. I lived on the East Coast for a few years. The company I used to work for, it's such an impact that I think it gets more attention than a forest fire. The forest fires start slowly and they burn slower. Pretty soon we get this problems we have now, and it's way too late. We need to find a way to manage fires that start in our communities. Worst problem now, we got a little rain today. Hopefully it'll continue. I don't think it's going to. Very small. It's not going to stop these fires from burning. And, we went for so many years now with the anti-environmentals trying to protect old growth timber. I guarantee you fire has no conception of what old growth is or new growth. It's all getting burned. And the destruction is going to last for years and years to come. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Just a brief comment related to the smoke and the fires.
Your name and address, please, first, Ms.
Bell. Gene Mount,
yes.
Friends, password. I just had a comment related to the fires, the smoke, which we're all, of course, dealing with, and the many myths that exist related to wildfire and forest management. And I think it behooves us all, and I think this is something that the commissioners and our community has taken into consideration, is the fact we have to have things based on science, and this is not just going to work by more logging. We have had fires in these areas long, long years, and now we have many other factors which do impact our forests in our areas, and I also want to mention that we know climate change is one of those. We have many more people living in the areas. And so just taking down and logging is not the whole answer. Please consider the larger picture. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes.
county, and I think that hiring people right now is a bit presumptive and perhaps jumping the gun a little bit when we haven't even passed these restrictions yet. I also would like to question how we have money to hire code enforcers when in our area we don't even have money for police officers. We've had three shootings in the last couple months. So some explanation on that. Maybe it comes from different departments, I'm sure, but it seems a little ridiculous. I also just want to quickly throw it in there that an economy is only as healthy as its real estate market, and we have, as of the discussions beginning on these RFI properties, seen a plummet in the Illinois Valley on people looking at RFI properties. They immediately ask the zone. As soon as they find out the zone, they don't want to look at it anymore. So maybe that's for a different hearing day, but I just want to throw that in there that it's happening, and a recession of some level will happen in our valley. We are not Grants Pass. We are the Illinois Valley, and we live on a completely different set of rules, economic rules, than Grants Pass in the surrounding areas. This is all we have down there. So, again, I'd ask you to table 4B and 4C, hiring people to enforce codes that haven't been voted in yet. Seems a little unfair, especially when people voted it down. Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. There's a couple of nexuses I think that I can probably shed some light on here really quickly. I think Ms. Castanelli started out with the issues on 4B and C. Those are consent calendar items. They were in the budget, and that's why they're there. The first one, the senior code enforcement administrator position in community development, that person is already there. They are already our one code enforcement officer for the county. They were hired more than 6 months ago and are performing at a level that is higher than entry level. So that's the, being that we only have one, she's going probably above and beyond what her current job description is provided. And so she's working out of class, and that's not appropriate. We're not hiring anybody new. It's just we're putting that person in a position that reflects what the job description that they're actually doing on a daily basis. They are addressing, I think Mr. Jones made a very good point about the current infractions that we have on the books, and I think Commissioner DeYoung has proposed that we go at them one at a time. So right now we've made progress on Capjoy Road. That was one of our biggest infractions. I think most of us were probably familiar with that one. It's back in the private sector's hands. It's been totally cleaned up. It's not easy to do that under our current codes and how we regulate. We do have about 12 or 13 that are in the queue that are going to court, and that's the process. It's kind of cumbersome, it's a little long, but we also fully respect the private property right element of it. So that's just kind of a snapshot of where we're moving. It's a high priority for this board to get those issues resolved. It is not a reflection of the RR proposal. This was being proposed way before. Probably even the May question was even asked of the voters, and that outcome was determined. Item number 4C, proposed table, is what Ms. Castanelli was suggesting, of the commercial plans examiner position in community development under building and safety. We currently have a person who's gotten certification in the commercial plans examining arena. There's a whole host of different certifications that are required in that office. Currently, we outsource most of our commercial plans reviews to a contractor in Jackson County, former planning community, building codes director, Mr. Rice. He's state renowned. He was past president of the Association for Codes Examinations in the state. Provides really good work. We are looking to try to provide an expeditious process, so having some breadth of being able to do commercial plans examining within that program is going to help out. The larger stuff that we still have for major commercial projects are still going to be done by that contractor. We just don't have the probably the expertise and the time within our office to do that. So this is just an incremental increase in the ability to provide that service locally and in a more timely fashion, as opposed to getting on the contractor's schedule in Jackson County for that. Really, commercial plans examinations is pretty cut and dry. We're just applying state codes. that go through the International Code Council and are adopted by our state. So that's what those two have to do with. I think it's probably, and I believe we already have that person in-house. They got certified, so we're changing their job description. There will be an ability to hire the previous person's job duties in that program. All of that just hopefully makes for a more expeditious process when people are coming in and needing something done and reviewed. We can't get their permit until we have a person review them. And that has nothing to do with the four questions, four ordinances that were referred to the voters years ago. Nothing had to do with building and safety elements in that. It was a solid waste element and some other issues. So it's really people trying to make something look like something else. I can appreciate, you know, just glancing at our agenda and not really having all of the backstory. However, we do discuss these items about 6 days prior at our administrative meeting. I'm available anytime. I'm the liaison to both of those issues, those programs, and be happy to kind of discuss those with people. You don't have to wait till your weekly business session on Wednesday to have that kind of conversation and hopefully providing some clarity on it. I believe Mr. Brandis has a response to Mr. Seligman's Lake Selmac question of if there was, I don't know, a landslide or a flood. I don't think we're anticipating that right now or have in the future, but I think for the fire element, talking about the transportation system in here in our roads for having Lakeshore closed down, can you enlighten us a little bit on
that? Sure, a couple question? Options. So first would be off Thompson Creek, the Cave Junction side Thompson Creek, as opposed to Wood. There is a BLM road, I believe it's 39721, that continues south off of that, and I think at some point it becomes Bear Camp Road, or Bear Creek Road, sorry. Okay. But it is a hard surface the whole way through there. We'll go ahead and get something formalized on a map that eventually punches out on Highway 46. We'll get something formalized on a map with GIS and get something put up on the Public Works website. The other alternative, in a pinch, Philip, we've got to get everybody out of that side of the lake. Bridge contractor could certainly throw a culvert down in there at the bottom of the spillway and put a couple of loads of dirt or whatever we need to do to get folks out. So there is already one, if not a second option, should it come to that.
I think it's important that we check and make sure that Thompson Creek, Bear Creek Road is open. I was just up at Little Grayback, and I'm not. No, it doesn't come out there. It comes out farther, close to south, down 46. I know where it comes out, and it's open.
Yeah. So yep. We'll work with emergency services and make sure we get something up on.
Yeah, I think that would be website. You know, kind of like a tsunami evacuation route. If people don't know about it, and that's probably the case, they just need to know that there's an alternative, and we're blessed that there is one. I think there's a lot of places in Josephine County where there isn't an alternative. We live in a proverbial, you know, a bowl, a valley,
yes.
And there's roads that don't have exits out of them. So that's one of the reasons why I think it's really important to people to recognize the three different levels of evacuation notice to prepare, you know, where would you go? And certain areas need more notification ahead of time, you know. So that's good to bring to mind for people to be vigilant.
Is there an opportunity for us, if this goes to level two out of the valley, that we mark those roads, that we have signs prepared to mark?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got them on hand at the shop. We can certainly even get something out there on site ready to go that's just
targeted. There's probably a lot of people that just wouldn't, you know, you rattle off roads and no road numbers and stuff, but when you're in a hurry, sometimes you don't have time to stop and you'll go right on by.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, and before we get there, I would like to point out that Illinois Valley Fire District has plans in place for any evacuation, and there's five checkpoints throughout the valley out there that they're asking folks to check in, and they'll get evacuation information. It was announced at the public meeting on Sunday night at the Illinois Valley High School, and the Illinois Valley Fire District could be contacted about where those specific points are. CERT team members, which are the citizen emergency response teams, will be manning all of those posts. And if you get registered with the citizen alert system that the county has, notifications will go to you based on your geographic registration where you've signed up for services. So you can get a notification at your home phone, email, cell phone, that if there is an evacuation change, we have the ability to get that information to you. I would like to clarify that right now, related to the fire, Illinois River Road is the only area in a level 3 go evacuation level. And then all of 199 from Hayes Hill to the California border is on a level 1 be ready evacuation level on the west side. So if you're heading to the coast, anything to the right of 199 is on a level 1 be ready evacuation. And we've put out some press releases for contact information as far as if you are able to help people with evacuation of their animals. We are gathering the information so that if somebody needs help, we can get them connected to the right place. Red Cross has been involved, and we have shelters designated and ready to go when that time comes. So there are teams already planned and ready to go if evacuation comes to be. And they're aware of the areas that have, for instance, the detours on Lakeshore right now with the Deer Creek detour and stuff like that. So there are options out there. And Illinois Valley Fire District will be the point of information for where to go once those evacuations, if they go in Illinois Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
And just as a quick aside, as far as nuisance abatement, solid waste ordinance, these sorts of things, I can tell you that our department is getting dozens of calls a month regarding this kind of stuff. You wouldn't think so, but it is close enough to the right of way, in the right of way where we become the court of last resort. It is certainly costing us thousands, probably $10,000 to $20,000 a year that we didn't see even 2 years ago to mitigate this kind of stuff when it makes its way to the public right away. So one more point, David.
There's one more point that I need to make as the liaison for the Community Development Department. So we have questions about a pending LUBA case, and so we won't speak to the merits of the case in public, but I think the administration element, Mr. Ross, you raised some questions about it. I believe at the hearing I did ask for concurrence of the board after my statement that that was the opinion of the county. We didn't take a formal vote because there wasn't a formal, I think the jurisdiction of the board to hear the matter was in question, and our determination was that it was outside of our jurisdiction. That doesn't solve the problem or change the process. Obviously, there's been a LUBA appeal, Land Use Board of Appeals, and the process will work. People will get their chance to be heard by whether we would have approved it or denied it. It would have been appealed to LUBA, and so it's far from over. It's going to be resolved eventually, and I think right now that's where we're at. The jurisdiction or the authority given to Mr. Hicks to act on behalf of the county probably has, I'm not sure if there's anything in addition to his election, but I think that's fairly significant in my mind. Is he's been hired by the voters. As an actual delegate of the board, I'm not sure, and I'll check into that to make sure that we're all on the same page. I had other comments, but those are the ones that I wanted to answer on behalf of the board. Oh, I have one more. I apologize. Carolyn McNamara, you asked about access to the executive session. Those freedom of information, that's a federal public records requests, are facilitated through legal's office. I don't make the determination whether or not those are available for the public or not. That's done by Wally Hicks and our legal counsel's office. And you can certainly ask. I can't say that we are going to grant those or not. That's up to him. So he makes the determination based on liability or whether or not it's a public record. And some of those executive sessions are not a public record unless otherwise determined by a court. Okay. Anyone else want to speak on?
Yeah, I just want to bring up to the young lady from Cave Junction and to Mr. Seligman. I'm listening to everybody. I get a lot of calls, and I get a lot of calls every day because that's what I do. I sit at my desk, and they funnel them right into my office. And for every call that
Thank
I
you.
Get, big pardon?
Thank you.
You're welcome. And for every call that I get that says you're going to ruin the economy and the whole place is going to implode and so on and so forth, if I can't continue growing my crop and selling it and so on and so forth, for every one of those, I get another one that says, I've spent $750,000 on the home of my dreams, and now I'm completely surrounded by marijuana growers. And unfortunately, a lot of people have a tendency to dump all marijuana growers and cannabis industry into one bucket. I'm not doing that because there are some legitimate actual marijuana industry growers out there that are trying to do it right. They're doing everything they're supposed to. They're extremely good neighbors because I've talked to their neighbors. And then there's an element that goes around and says, you know what, I'm here, you don't like it, get the H out, and so on and so forth. Those are the ones that I'm hearing from both sides of that. So when I get one side or the other that comes up and says, I need it all my way, because I'm the one enhancing the economy of the Illinois Valley, and there's nothing else out in the Illinois Valley for us except for cannabis, then I have to take a little bit of pause when I hear that statement. I think the Illinois Valley's got huge potential, whether it's cannabis, natural resources, mining, whatever it is. There's an awful lot going for it out there. But maybe if you talk to the other folks, they're saying cannabis is holding us back. You mentioned property values. That property values are plummeting if we do this R5 thing. I got two phone calls the other day said my property values have plummeted because I'm surrounded and I can't sell my property because I'm surrounded by cannabis. They get out of the car, they see the grows, they're gone. And it's the other way around is what, I've heard from both sides. So I want a fair warning to everybody. I've said this before, I'll say it again. There is not one citizen in Josephine County that's going to get everything they want. Not one. Not you, not me, not Commissioner Warren, nobody. Not one of us is going to go down the checklist of everything they want on these ordinances or anything we do with the cannabis industry today, tomorrow, or 10 years from now that's going to get everything that they want. That's impossible. I'm not even going to try that task. But, and when you say, okay, you had, I think Ms. Castanelli said, well, 10 years ago we had this 80-20 vote. Well, that 80-20 vote was on a specific set of things on the ballot. Whole different deal now. Maybe some of them look a lot alike, some of them, but not all of them. Because why? We're going to take the 80-20 into consideration and come back with a different proposal. The fact that it was 80-20 6 years ago or 5 years ago, 3 years ago means nothing to me because that was a vote at that time. We also sent out one that Mr. Seligman says is only 25% of the vote. We can run these numbers up and down the flagpole all day long and justify what we think. I can do the exact same thing when it comes to the car culture. But we all have to step back and say it was 65-35 approximately on this exploratory question. Then I had a lady call yesterday and said, well, that was on recreational growth, not commercial growth. And she says, so you're going to do an ordinance on something that you didn't, that doesn't have anything to do at all with that exploratory question. The exploratory question does not bind us to say, okay, if we do come up with an ordinance, it's going to be exactly as that question read. Because the state, since then, has come in and said, have their rendition as to what is a commercial grower. So that's what we're dealing with. So it's, I would like a little bit of patience. And then we've got the people that says, why didn't you do this 5 years ago? And then you've got the people that say, you better hold off for 2 more years. Well, gosh darn it, it's tough up here. And I've volunteered for this job, and I'm not afraid of it. I'm not afraid of the phone calls I get in any way, shape, or form. But I just want some patience from everybody. They're going to continue to step up to that microphone 3 minutes at a time and give us their opinion. Mr. Seligman is there every meeting. He gets better attendance than most of us have. Kudos. Sandy Castanelli, same way. She's here every meeting. She's always got something to say. But one of the things that we have to understand is that there is going to be a compromise, and it's not going to hit everybody's sweet spot. And just know that going in. And if you don't think that's right, then come on up. I'll be up for election in, 3.5 years? Your opportunity will be here in 3.5 years. So that's all I have to say. It's frustrating, and, I don't mean for my frustration to leak out, but it does. Every once in a while, I got to tell. Thank you for being patient.
Commissioner Morgan.
How do you follow that? I don't. I hear you. You've heard a lot, and we have on all sides. The reality is we're... cannabis isn't going away. We're not trying to make it go away. We're trying to find a way to bring peace in our valley that people can have the success from the industry while also being good neighbors. And that's really, if we could come up with a perfect solution, that would be it, is for every neighbor to be a good neighbor. If every neighbor took upon themselves the responsibility to be a good neighbor, then you wouldn't need enforcement and government intervention. Because when we've left it to people to just come up with the right solution, unfortunately, it hasn't worked, and they've come to us and say, please regulate. I was at Taylor's yesterday for lunch, and I had somebody come up to me who is a pro-marijuana guy, came up to me and said, I've been trying to sell my property, but because of the grow across the street, I lost $40,000 value on my property. And so it's one of those things. We hear it from both sides. Is it because of the regulations? Is it because of this and that? No, these positions are certainly not related to it. These are existing already. And you heard today testimony saying, when are you going to enforce your own regulations? And yet you have other testimony that said, why are you trying to enforce anything? Let us be alone. And so, again, to reiterate, we're not going to please everybody, but we are going to try to find a way to best meet the needs of. And for us, we have said our priority is health and human safety. And so if the safety of our community, the health of our community, those are our number one goals. And I know we're not going to please everybody, but we are going to try to listen to everybody and hear everybody out and try to see if working with the community, we can come up with solutions. I would rather the solutions come from the community than us try to legislate and make those regulations. Because honestly, that's what works best, is when neighbors can figure out things to work with neighbors. Unfortunately, we've had other situations where you won't find a place more pro-cannabis than Williams. Everybody says Illinois Valley is, but I can tell you Williams is more so. And going to a community meeting in Williams where neighbors are trying to be neighborly and say, hey man, did you realize you just bulldozed over my trees at the property line with your bulldozer as you're putting in your grow? And the guy gets beat up by the person on the tractor and has rocks thrown at him and various things. So they're trying to deal with it in a way, and so they then turn to us and say, will you please intervene? We tried being neighborly. It didn't work. And to me, we don't have enough sheriff's deputies, but as you know, the vote in May, the money for May is not collected till November. The sheriff is trying to ramp up. Based on the budget he had for the full year, he's trying to ramp up what he can, so by the time the money does come in November, we can have those services in place. We're doing the same at juvenile justice. With the money from the forest trust that we're able to open the shelter side, the levy that we'll be able to open the detention side, and because we're opening those, it opened up the opportunity to get grants from the state to cover some more services. So because of the vote, because of the trust that this board put in place to support the shelter, we were able to access more funds to do more services for the juveniles over there. Everybody's ramping up, but I've heard people say, well, we passed your levy, why isn't there more help yet? Well, levy in May doesn't get money till November taxes, so it just doesn't happen overnight. And the other thing is, when you hire a new deputy, it takes time to get them through background check, make sure you get the right person hired, 4 months at an academy, training with a field training officer to make sure that they're doing the job right, and then you get them out on the street. It's not something that just happens tomorrow. We would love to have it. We have named our three resident deputies that are, you know, going to be in those areas. That was one of the promises of the levy. But you have to still hire the people to fill the difference. And so it doesn't happen overnight. The money for planning is a different source. I do appreciate that you guys have taken the time to come here today and comment on these things. At the end, I'll comment on my travel. If you come to our meetings regularly enough, you see that when we go out of town, we come back and give a report of what happened while we were out of town. So last week I did get to attend the National Cannabis Conference in Denver. It was paid for out of prevention and treatment dollars from the state. They collect taxes off of alcohol and tobacco, and they give it back to the community, and that's what paid for the trip. It did not come out of our department budget. And it was a pretty neat experience, but again, I'll wait for the end to speak on that because that's when the time we normally do that process.
Mr. DeYoung, you had something?
Yeah, just for Mr. Jones, and I wish he was still here because he has a very valid point. It seems slow and arduous that we get anything done about these compounds. We've been brought a tremendous, a whole stack of pictorial images of all over this county of compounds, and unfortunately, there's a good portion of them that belong to the cannabis industry because they're people that come in, they live in little whatever trailer house they can find, and then they leave. They're gone in the fall, and they leave it behind. They leave a heck of a mess behind. And we have a bunch of these. One of them, I think Chairman Hare brought up, was on Campjoy Road. We targeted that. We put our focus on it. We put the magnifying glass above it, and we put all of our resources behind it and got it cleaned up. The people out in the North Valley, letter after letter, letters to the editor, thank you for cleaning up Campjoy Road. It was an eyesore and a blight on our neighborhood and our community. That's one. There's another one out in the south end of town, out in the Murphy area. We targeted that. That was up next. When we went to go out there, they had done, heard that this was going on, and they'd already started cleaning their mess up. They started to come back, and I talked to the undersheriff, and I said, you know, rather than a full-fledged, let's have an onslaught, how about if you're going on your way between here and Williams, you've got cars going by there all day long, correct? And he goes, yeah, let's pop in and say hi. Just the fact that there was a squad car in the yard about three or four times a week kept a lot of the people and the drug dealing and stuff, it just started to go away because they knew they were harassing them, but they were stopping in to see how things were going. And that really is just little things like that, thinking outside the box. We had a lady that had a speeding problem out in her area, and we took one of our disabled police cars and put it in her front yard. Guess what? Everybody started slowing down. I still slow down to that little 54 Ford out in O'Brien. When I come across that hill, headed to the coast, I'm on the binders every time. There's an awful lot going on, but we are targeting one at a time. We're going to get these places cleaned up as much as we can. Some of them are quite dangerous. There's one we've got a report on out in the North Valley that they were Molotov cocktails and stuff when anybody tried to go on the property. Is that what you want for your neighbor? I don't think I want that for my neighbor, but if that's the way you want to live. And when people call, we have to dispatch people who go out there. You mentioned, you know, that we didn't get any response out in the K Junction area. When I went out to the fire thing the other night, I passed three sheriff's cars that had been out there all day, headed back in for shift day. The sheriff and I went out and did a town hall at Tequila. And we discussed it on the way out. I rode out with the sheriff, and he said, well, I don't know how many people we have out here. And I said, well, I'll keep you told that maybe they see a cop once in a while. We passed two on the way back in and talked to two in the shopping center parking lot where they had a bus going on there. Two there, and then the sheriff and I. And so that was six deputies in K Junction. Well, I'm told there's never anybody there. So, you know, I have some conflicting stuff going on here. And the sheriff is trying really hard. He's shifted a bunch of stuff around. He's doing the very best he can with what he is. And Commissioner Morgan is absolutely right. It takes time to ramp these up. They've been decommissioned for so long that it takes time. When I was in the Navy decommissioned a ship, I can't even imagine how long it takes to put that thing back in service. So, you know, a little patience would be appreciated. But we're trying to, you know, we're working hard and we're working, you know, for the people. And we get the phone calls daily. Brother, I get a lot of them. And I try to answer everyone. Sometimes I don't get back for a couple of days, but I do try to get back to everybody.
Anything else?
No.
Last thing I would say is this RR thing is probably the most challenging issue that I've had to deal with since I've been in office for about 7 years now. And I think Commissioner DeYoung puts it well, nobody's going to be perfectly happy. But we weren't given all the tools in the tool chest and really weren't even consulted on Measure 91 or the legislature that much. This is not the same issue that they have up in Salem or other parts of the state. Our issues are fairly unique to Josephine County. I'd say that we're fairly saturated as far as grows are concerned, but we're not done yet. There's a lot of EFU land ground that is not under cultivation and under production. And so I think people need to be prepared for it to continue to grow and expand here. I think the proposal that we've seen from the Rural Planning Commission looking for reasonable restrictions on grows in neighborhoods. The number one priority for residential neighborhoods is residential opportunities. It's not for that conflicting element of a commercial operation in those areas. So whether or not there's an deflated market in the RR area. Maybe it was overinflated to begin with. This is not an issue that Jackson County is dealing with. It is prohibited in their RR and their rural land development code to grow for commercial operations over there. And it was probably something that was it was lacking in our code here. And the first priority is to accommodate something that can't happen anywhere else in the code. So you can do residential elements in other parts of the county, but that's not the first priority for a woodlot resource, a forest commercial property, or an exclusive farm. Those ones are set aside, goals 4 and 5, by the state to protect those things. And goal number one in the state is public involvement. And one of the things that I thought was really beneficial of the testimony to the Rural Planning Commission was that community dispute resolution proposal by one of the constituents that came forward. Ideally, that's exactly how it should be, is that there should be the ability for a neighbor to have fewer restrictions. I'm a private property right advocate. Fewer restrictions, and somebody be able to come in and say, you know, I went to my neighbor, he wasn't receptive to talking. Let's not go to court. Let's go to this community dispute resolution situation where a hearings officer would preside over these two disputes, this dispute between the neighbors, and hands down a verdict that says you're going to need to do these things and you're going to have to be more patient with this situation or what have you. I think if I look at the timber industry and how the regulations have evolved over that for 30 years, this is not something we're going to solve with this RR text amendment. It's going to be something incrementally improved upon over time. One of the challenges that I have a business degree. People need to understand that there's high risk and high reward for first movers. Those are people who invest in developing industries. And so when you go into a place, any industry, you don't know all of the rules. The rules haven't been set. Don't assume that they have. And they're going to be evolving over time. And people are just going to have to understand that there's a balance of risk and reward for their investment in that. And I didn't make the determination for people to invest in those places. And if they're looking at the tea leaves like we are and saying that there are going to be additional restrictions that negatively impact people's homes in RR, you should be aware of that. That is coming, whether it's coming from the county or the statewide level, as these grows happen to impact more urbanized areas. It's an occupational hazard of the industry. So it's not, you would get that whether it was these three people sitting here or the next three people. It's gonna happen. So we're gonna try to get it right. We're gonna try to thread this needle as well as possible. And I think patience is what everybody should be trying to practice, which most people do actually. And I should thank the public for when they comment and they are patient, but this is a very emotional issue. Moving on to the administrative calendar, item number 2A is approval of local agency agreement number 32280, locally delivered state-funded project program Sand Creek Road Bridge. And I'd entertain a motion to approve.
Take a motion to approve item 2A.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. Item number 2B is approval of contract for personal services with David Evans and Associates for the replacement of the Sand Creek Bridge.
Make motion item 2B approved.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. Item number 4 is approval of the consent calendar made up of item 4A, various minutes of the Board of Commissioners. Item number 4B is senior code enforcement administrator position in community development. I've reviewed this issue. Mr. Schofield, our HR director, is not here, but to just reiterate, this is providing for a job description to reflect the performance of the duties of the current person. They are working out of class and doing a lot of work that Mr. Jones has referenced in his prior comments, and so that's kind of necessary for us to maintain that position. Item number 4C is commercial plans examiner position in community development under building and safety. I reviewed this issue as well, and it's just to reflect the additional certification of the person in this position, and we will hopefully be advertising for an additional plans examiner, probably without the commercial certification, but trying to broaden our ability to accommodate those developments in-house. Item number 4D is Amendment Number 1 to Intergovernmental Agreement Number 160056 with the State of Oregon Judicial Department for Courtroom Improvements. This is something we've been talking about for actually over a year now. We did get authorization from the state to increase the amount of money they're providing it for courtroom improvements. Really, the court system went to eCourts about a year ago. They have multiple monitors at their dais, and so in order to accommodate that, they have to have them recessed. Otherwise, they can't see either the witness or other people in the courtroom. It's not a small project and challenging, as you might imagine, having to try to tailor each judge's bench to their preference and accommodate all the new technology. And so it was going to cost a little bit more. We had one person respond to the RFP for this project. The state agreed to those increased costs, and so this is the amendment number 1 to the IGA to account for that. Item number 4E is the findings of fact and conclusion of law in the matter of appeal filed by Brimstone Natural Resources Company of the Community Development Director's decision to approve with conditions to authorize placer mining activities within the riparian corridor of Brimstone Gulch and to consider the proposed reclamation and landscaping plan, assessor's legal description of 34-06-08 tax lot 800. This is an issue that came before the board, and it was the board's determination that it was outside the jurisdiction of the board to hear such a matter. And as it was discussed earlier, this issue has been appealed to the Land Use Board of Appeals. We're waiting for their response on this issue, and in order to do so, for them to reflect the full breadth of the hearings, they need our findings of fact and conclusion of law. And so that's what this is. It's very short, and it just speaks to the matter that came before the board in our decision of the outcome. So, and item number 4F is a report and recommendation for disposal of property pursuant to ordinance number 2014-003. And we have Ms. Carol Lee and our property control specialist to present the recommendation and report.
Good morning,
Commissioner. Good morning.
Carol Lee, Justin Pennsylvania's office. Over the years, we've disposed of a great amount of property. It comes in any number of ways. And once again, we have another list, although it's not a very long list, another list of property that you want to dispose of at the discretion of the Sheriff's Office per ordinance 14003. Any questions that I can answer?
If we see it up here, but what's the process you go through before this? Yet, before this property, you have to go through you do an awful lot of research to try to find out who's the rightful owner of this property prior to this getting to this stage. Could you go through that just real quick, Mike?
Sure, we're a paperless paper mill. It depends on what type of case it is. If it's criminal proceedings, once all the defendants are adjudicated, you have to make sure you know who all the defendants are. Once they're all adjudicated, and then it's a certain time after that period that the property can be disposed of. And then if it's been forfeited by the courts, that's also a different matter. So it just depends. If it's found property, we do what we can to find the owners. We look through the reports in our CAD system and see if I'm missing a red Huffy bike. That's not very descriptive. I can't help you much with that. But I do research if there's something, a distinctive marking or something like that. Serial numbers, we obviously run those. Know your serial numbers on your property. That helps us a lot. If somebody reports a burglary or something, if they don't have serial numbers on guns or TVs or VCRs, and we get a recovery of a great amount of property, which we did 2 years ago, if they don't have that information and don't provide us that information, it makes it much harder for us to get property back. So it just depends on the way it comes in. Lately, we've been doing a lot of e-news because there's a lot of stolen vehicles out there. And in the stolen vehicles, we presume stolen property because the suspect fled or whatever. So it just depends on the manner in which the property comes in and what our steps are. For vehicles, I send a letter out to the address of the known owner, if we know who it is. Vehicles are coming in now with no VIN plates, switch VIN plates. Forget switch vehicles. Mm-hmm. We're talking, they're replacing both the hidden and dashboard bins. So it's getting more and more complicated to find out who owns something, but we're doing the best we can.
And there's a time frame? I mean, it depends on the evidence.
It depends on the type of case. Yeah. We had a case, was in late 16, and we were just getting rid of a whole bunch of stuff. And this new case came in with what we believe was a stolen trailer because it was attached to a stolen vehicle, and in the back of the trailer was a whole bunch of very expensive equipment. I can't find the owners. And we've been sitting on it for a year, just hoping somebody will, because it's very distinctive machinery. And it's very expensive. And obvious.
I think one of the most important elements is that the revenues from this disposition don't directly go back to the sheriff's office. And I think for people's transparency of government and knowing that when there is an investigation, confiscation of evidence and such, that there isn't any kind of incentive on behalf of the sheriff's office to confiscate more or something that's not directly related, because there isn't a direct benefit to the sheriff's office. And that's been really important to me, that there's a significant separation between anything that's in your care and the revenues generated by the disposition. And so as long as I'm on this board, that will be a high priority for your office, and just keeping it above board, as I know you do. It's probably pretty crazy, all the things that you try to pursue as far as getting this stuff back to the rightful owner. We don't want it, and I know you don't want to have to inventory and organize and move several times. So there's a benefit from least amount of work if you can just kind of get it back to the people who it belongs to.
Yeah, we want the property to go back to the owners. Absolutely. And sometimes it's really impossible to find out who that owner is.
Yeah. Anything else? Thank you so much, Ms. Carrie Lee. I'll entertain a motion for the approval of the consent calendar, items 4A through F.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. Any other items that should properly come before the board at this time? We'll move on to number 6, which is matters from commissioners. Commissioner DeYoung?
The fairgrounds and the Christian board can probably expand on this a little bit, but we're trying to provide, we've got a number of agencies in the area for the fires, and one of them was Red Cross. They were looking for a home for a temporary period of time, and they thought the Jerome Perry School would work, but now I think they're back to taking a closer look at the Josephine County Fairgrounds. So I talked to Peggy Anderson, the fairgrounds manager, yesterday, and she's moving her schedule and some schedules around to accommodate them if they need the fairgrounds as a base, as a home base. So a lot of things going on out there. That fire out in the Illinois Valley is just devastating. I think we're all tired of the smoke. I think it bothers my mom an awful lot. My wife is getting grumpier and grouchier, which means my meatloaf was not quite up to par. It had a smoky flavor to it, but I'm just hoping they can get that out. I have all the prayers and hopes in the world for the Forest Service and whoever's fighting that fire. Try to get that thing put out. It boggles my mind. The one up in the Columbia is just, outrageous. I've seen pictures on the internet of that fire. It's crazy. People, why couldn't they put that out? They have the Columbia River right there. They also have a wind issue in the Columbia Gorge that just is really hard to predict minute to minute. Makes it tough to fly aircraft to put these things out and fight that fire because they don't know which way it's going to go. So it's Oregon's pretty well engulfed if you look at the entire state. We've got a real problem here. But we'll get through it. It'll rain.
Commissioner Morgan.
I did want to give an update on the fire status as well. Today we are getting a type 2 incident team that's assigned to our side of the fire, on the east side of the fire, which means that there'll be a team kind of advocating for what's going on our side. So up till this point, everything regarding the fire has been run out of the Brookings area. And so as of today, they're dividing that up into two divisions. So we'll have our own incident command of sorts on our side. They take over as of 8 o'clock tonight. And they're continuing to bulldoze a line, and then the intent is the next step is to backburn it so that if the fire reaches that, it'll stop at that point with that backburn. So they've ordered the team to come in to do the backburn, and the problem with the fires all over the Northwest is there's not more firefighters available to come to us. They have basically told us we have to make do with what we have. So the 1,600 firefighters that are in the folks that are fighting the fire on the Brookings side are those same ones we have to fight the fire on our side. So they're trying to be intentional. All of these Southern Oregon fire agencies are working together and are available to help, but you're right, the resources, we locally sent resources up north because it was a quicker risk to homes and lives up there. And so we sent resources up north yesterday, help fight in those fires and turn around and come back. And if it gets to the point that our homes are at risk, those folks are going to come to us. And that's just kind of how fire service works, is mutual aid where you send people here and there. I do want to point out that there is a volunteer organization. It's just local people who care about our community. Southern Oregon Emergency Aid has taken on the task of keeping the list of people willing to help other people when it comes to animal rescue or evacuation. And so if you're able to house livestock, pets, large or small, or anything else like that to help if an evacuation happens, there is Southern Oregon Emergency Aid. You can find them on Facebook. They have an email that is soeaevacteam@gmail.com, or they have a phone number, which is 541-226-1124. And that's for people who can help house animals or help transport animals. If you are somebody that's going to be in an area that is getting evacuated and you need help with where to take your animals, Josephine County Public Health is coordinating that process, and we have an email address for you as well. It's called jocoanimalevacuation@gmail.com, or there's a phone number, 541-474-5390, and that's if you need help. What we will do is get you connected with one of those resources that have called Southern Oregon Emergency Aid. And so we're not going to put something out on Facebook saying, take your animals here. We're going to say, we need to know your exact need. We'll get you connected with a specific resource so that we're not overwhelming any one location. We're going to make sure that we get everybody help. Again, our priority is safety of lives and getting people safe, animals safe, and then we will try to keep property safe. So that's kind of where things are right now. The information line for the fire, if you have questions, is 469-1177. So wanted to pass that along. And when's the appropriate time to talk about the Colorado trip?
Anytime you like.
All right, so I was invited. I am the liaison for public health, and I'm also the liaison for the local Alcohol, Drug, and Prevention Commission, LADPC. And they asked me to attend a cannabis conference, the National Cannabis Conference in Denver last week. I wasn't certain what I was signing up for exactly. I saw that it was a policy-related event, but I am actually really glad that I was able to go and attend. This is a neutral party. It's not for or against cannabis. It's simply just saying, here's where we are. Here's the states that have kind of gone through the process already. Here's the states that are in the middle of the process. Here's the ones that haven't even got started. And it brought people from all over the country in to say, what do we learn from those who've already gone through it? What policies are working? What methods are working as far as effective policy? And there was a lot of people from Colorado speaking, and so far they have incurred $1.4 billion in revenue in Colorado off their cannabis industry. And I attended a conference in May here in Oregon. It was the Western Interstate Regional Conference, and there were people from Colorado there saying, why didn't you guys learn from our mistakes? Why did you start from scratch with Oregon legislation and kind of, why didn't you ask us for help? We're not the ones who have set the policy at the state level, so it's not something I can necessarily answer other than to say that once we created the policy, the state had to come back 2 years later and change all the policy, and most likely we'll change it again and again because we're learning as we go. But they do have a lot to offer in what Washington and Colorado have done from both a medical standpoint and an adult use standpoint. They're basically calling the adult use retail. So the two terms you'll hear at a national level are retail or medical. Most of the sessions that I attended were related to regulatory models and policy making, because really that's the biggest function that we do here. Economic development is one of the functions we as commissioners do as well. And then there were others from, there was somebody from the state police that was attending, from the Portland area, and our treatment and prevention manager was there, and so she attended some public health ones, and there was a local public health member, community member, that also attended. So we each attended different breakout sessions from different topics. And I think one of the things that stood out to me is Oregon, for the most part, wasn't there. And some of the things that I think would have been helpful is other states are looking for advice on what do they do if they're addressing the cannabis situation is Oregon created a bifurcated system where we have recreation going through OLTC and medical going through Oregon Health Authority, and those agencies aren't working together, and the enforcement isn't working together, and they're not working with locals equally together, and that's part of why the state had to come back and change the regulations. And in January, you're going to see a whole different breakdown of how things are working. There's a cannabis commission that's been created in Oregon. Anything over 12 plants is going to be tracked seed to sale through OLCC. And so it was one of those things that I thought it would be beneficial for someone from Oregon speaking to what Oregon's gone through to kind of warn other states, don't do what we did. We didn't do it right. Anyhow, it was an opportunity to kind of have a back and forth of that information. I actually had one of the organizers ask for my card to see about speaking next year, which was an interesting thing because I just was asking a lot of questions and had an opportunity to kind of see where things are at. But they had everything from policy groups, attorneys, legislators, every part of the regulatory process was represented from all the states that are kind of in the process. So for me, I went to learn what we can do and if there was anything that came out of it. They said they encourage people to be stricter on regulations because to start strict and you can loosen up as you go, but if you try to start loose and come down and tighten things up, it's harder. We're finding that. Where we waited to have regulations in Josephine County, putting them into place is harder than if those regulations had been put in place before those came through. So that was kind of consistent with the researchers that they had there. If anybody has specific questions about the conference, I could probably talk for hours about it because there was a lot to learn. And I'd be happy if anyone wants to email me or call me, I'll talk to them about the specifics.
Anything else? I think it's been said that this issue isn't going away for Josephine County, and so Commissioner Morgan being in the beginning of her term makes a lot of sense to have somebody who can be maybe the expert on those kinds of elements. We all have our varying degrees or expertise in different subject matter. Mine's natural resources and forest management, and it's really interesting to see people's posts on Facebook or other social medias about federal forest management policies. And, a lot of them have never read the Healthy Forest Restoration Act, the Federal Lands Policy Management Act of 1976, the ONC Act of 1937. I wouldn't say that I have those things memorized, but almost. I'm fairly well-versed, and it's interesting to have people come here and say they'd like stuff based on sound science and such. Technically, the sound science says that we shouldn't be managing it the way we are. And what we're doing right now is an extension of Oregon electing people who are professing to be advocates of conservation when really, long-term, they're putting all of it in the crosshairs of catastrophic wildfire. And it's not just in Southern Oregon anymore. Climate change was referenced, and I'm not a denier that there's things, the climate will always be changing. It is never going to stay the same. And I think we're getting to a place where people, the entire state needs to recognize the same sort of fire potential that Josephine County and Jackson County have been living with for decades. So we just passed our community wildfire protection plan in Josephine and Jackson County. We just updated it. It got little fanfare, and it's about 284 pages long. It's the first regional community wildfire protection plan adopted by two counties in the nation. And really what it comes down to is calling federal agencies on the carpet to doing what is in the law, what is already prescribed under FLIPMA, the ONC Act, and the Healthy Forest Restoration Act. Those are laws that have been disputed, challenged, and reinforced numerous times in litigation. And unfortunately, agencies and other members of Congress are not abiding by those things. We've got Senator Wyden and Merkley who are competing to have the 100% environmental rating as opposed to competing for the best interest of what I see are the best things for Josephine County, certainly, if not the state of Oregon. What's happening in the Northwest right now is a tragedy, but it's not something that happens overnight. It's decades of people not being able to come to consensus around an issue, and they may never do that. But at some point, you can't just keep doing nothing and expecting for positive results. I've been at too many meetings to count on federal forest management policy, state management policy, and very little improvement. I was on the governor's ONC task force for over a year, Governor Kitzhaber's, and nothing came of it because people don't have the political wherewithal to make something change. Unfortunately, I think it's going to take catastrophic wildfire for the entire state to be on fire like this, for the citizens to demand improvement. We're supposed to be transitioning out of a timber-based economy to a recreational-based economy or tourism-based economy. Nobody wants to go outside. Nobody's hiking anywhere. There was a question on Facebook, would people rather take a foot of snow or these last couple weeks of smoke? I take a foot of snow every day of the week and twice on Sunday. I will hike in that kind of, I was the first person to go up to the top of Cathedral Hills when we had about a foot of snow or 8 inches in Grants Pass. Doesn't bother me at all. I am not hiking in this stuff. I have a headache before I go outside, let alone after hiking 5 miles in it. So there's sound science. This issue is probably the most studied issue of anything in Oregon, forest management. So it doesn't need to be studied anymore. Something tangible needs to be done. And that's the challenge for me, is I don't know that it'll ever improve. It's kind of disheartening. The cannabis issue, as far as like saying that it's here to stay, that's not true. It's actually not true. It's important for the cannabis industry to recognize that the future of this industry is in their hands, if nobody else's. That they come forward and advocate for reasonable restrictions on this issue. If you just want to say, I don't want to be restricted or regulated at all, then the voters, the constituents, the disheartened, they're going to refer something, I would imagine, this May, saying, we don't want cannabis production at all in Josephine County anymore. And you know what? It just might pass. It probably would if it found its way on the ballot. I'm not saying that I'm going to be an advocate of referring something. I'd rather like work it out as reasonable citizens of this county, as opposed to somebody saying, well, this is just what we're going to do, and we're going to refer it to the voters. Because Measure 91 failed in Josephine County. There hasn't been a pro-cannabis piece of regulation passed the voters of Josephine County since the issue has gone to voters, other than the 3% local dispensary tax. It's the only issue that's ever passed on that when Josephine County voters were asked to the whole whether or not they were endorsing it. So I just think that people need to kind of wake up that regulations are actually in their best interest for this industry to flourish appropriately in our community. And we as a board are committed to trying to refine those policies and processes as best we can and thread that political needle and that challenge. If it were left up to the voters, it will not be a pretty outcome, I can assure you on that. So stay tuned. Still under development. Nothing further. Board's adjourned at 10:35. Thank you.